Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Yeah, you're very welcome along on a night when Arsenal's opening Europa League encounter has been delayed by an hour due to crowd trouble outside the Emirates Stadium involving the 20,000 travelling Cologne fans, enthused by the fact that their team was playing in Europe for the first time in a quarter of a century. But unfortunately, those numbers have ended up causing problems outside the Emirates. The game delayed by an hour. It is just about to kick off. A reminder of that Arsenal starting 11. David Ospina in goal. They've then got a back three, it seems. A back four even, perhaps even, of Holding, Mertesacker, Monreal and Bellerin, with Iwobi, Elneny, Maitland-Niles, Walcott, Alexis Sanchez and Olivier Giroud. 9:05 kickoff for that one. It is actually a back three, Holding, Mertesacker and Monreal in front of them, Iwobi and Elneny, Bellerin and Maitland-Niles as the wing backs, with Walcott and Sanchez in behind Giroud. And terrible to see this kind of thing happening, but ultimately there is some deal of responsibility has got to fall with Cologne because of the sheer volume of fans that went there, considering the amount of tickets that would have been available to them.
Probably right. You said there was 2,500 tickets available, I think, to Cologne coming in, wasn't there?
Yeah, so look, you've got 10% of the travelling fans are getting into the game.
How can they, I don't know, how can they stop that? They've obviously had to come over to the UK or go over to Arsenal, to London, to try to get the tickets in the Arsenal end.
Yeah, but that's ended up occurring, and the stewards and Arsenal have put out statements saying that anybody found to be, because security measures have to be brought to bear on this, anybody found to be within the home section, if they're an away supporter, will have to be ejected, such as the security issues that are facing.
Yeah.
And you can't blame them, because this is unknown territory and we're not in the realm of mixing fans, unfortunately, anymore. We just have to get in the game on TV. Thankfully, 3.5 minutes played and there is a free kick to be sent in by Cologne. Things that's been reported have died down, thankfully, on the trouble front. But there are apparently spits and spots of Cologne fans here and there within the Arsenal support who will be vocal throughout.
Exactly. But you just hope it just doesn't lead to anything. That's all. You hope that it's all good natured and, you know, you're going to get a good atmosphere there generated at the Emirates. Because in fairness, when I've been to the Emirates on occasions as well, it's not always the best of atmospheres there at the Emirates, considering that it's, you know, it is an incredible stadium. It's a great place to go and watch. At times, the Arsenal fans aren't always the most vocal. So I just hope that it's all good natured. There's no trouble and nothing actually comes of what's happened there.
Yeah.
But Cologne themselves are not having a great season, are they? Bottom of the Bundesliga at the moment. So they've not started too well, but 7-1 tonight. I don't know.
They've got an appalling away gear, by the way. We have to add. If I'm trying to explain this one, and without wanting to get bogged down in the superficialities of football, but that is a kind of light grey and luminous kind of highlighter yellow shorts and socks away to just Arsenal playing red.
It's
and white,
like
it's awful.
It's like a kid has said, "Go on, draw a strip for us," and then just, you know, just put loads of colours onto the front of the kit, and then let's just put it out there.
They've done a third class competition to see who can design Cologne's away gear, and you could win a season ticket for the year.
It doesn't look great, I have to say. Yeah, it doesn't look the best, but I don't know. It'd be interesting one to see how Arsenal go in this one as well, given the fact is that they haven't started the season particularly well. They're off the back of a really good result this weekend, albeit if you're going to pick a side, you're probably going to pick Bournemouth, aren't you, to come to you and think you're going to, you know, get a good win. They'll go and attack them. They'll probably leave a bit of space in behind. Going ahead of this game against Chelsea at the weekend as well, do teams respond after the Thursday games? They haven't necessarily done that. I was at Chelsea Everton last time out, when Everton didn't respond to playing on a Thursday night, and they're at United this weekend, so that might be a bit of a warning sign given what happened there at Stamford Bridge for them. But I'll be interested to see what happens with Arsenal over the next few weeks. People are saying that they're back on track now after that win against Bournemouth. I certainly don't see that at all with them. I think that you're going to have to show me that you're going to put in a good performance against Chelsea before I'm going to start to think that you're back and you can seriously be considered as title candidates.
Yeah, we've had a text in already from Jerry and Tip saying Cork City played Cologne in the Intertoto Cup in the summer 97, so it's less than a quarter of a century since they played in Europe. Jerry, if you're counting the Intertoto Cup as Europe, then Alan Pardew has made appearances in Europe for Tottenham, and that's a sad state of affairs, Jerry. Nobody likes a smart arse. Come on now. 5-3-1-0-6.
Good knowledge, though, isn't it?
It is good knowledge, in fairness, to have Intertoto Cup knowledge and to be travelling away with Cork City. For those of you who may have missed it, Marco Asensio missed out on Real Madrid's Champions League clash with Apoel Nicosia last night due to an infected pimple on his leg from shaving his legs. That's right. No criticism of that from me, I have to say. Amongst the criticism, though, he found an unlikely defender, that being in one Philip Q. Neville. If that's the defence of him, I don't want to hear the criticism, to be quite honest. Phil Neville, though, was one of those people who was backing Marco Asensio. I'll try and get you that audio in the next while. But he was one of the people backing Asensio,
yeah,
who was ruled out of a European game, which could have been a crucial one.
Yes.
I mean, Real, as we'll talk to with Graham a little bit later on, didn't have it easy last night.
Yeah.
And he missed out because he wanted to have his legs nice and smooth.
Before I go to this point, before I go to maybe the Phil Neville audio here, if anyone would have seen Roy Keane's reaction when it was mentioned to him yesterday, he was doing ITV with Lee Dixon, body language, facial expressions said it all. He didn't need to say anything else after that, so it was perfect. Perfect from, and I think he answered it the way most people would have wanted to answer it with words, but words, he didn't need to actually use words.
Well, it isn't like, we tend to laugh at this, and possibly rightly so. But if you do get like an infection like that, these things can be, especially if it's a hair going inwards, it's never fun. And,
all right, Rich.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you get them when you have a shave, and you always get them around the little, on your chin there, just a bad spot.
It's no crack that. And I've heard of people before who've had, you know, ingrowing hairs go into their spine, and then basically it's affected their spine. They've had to have very tricky.
I understand it, serious measure, but yeah, why is he shaving his legs in the first place?
You know, what's your problem with the shaving the legs?
Oh, Rich, come on. Who are you trying to please? Do you know what?
He could be trying to please anybody. It's up to him.
Is it? Yeah,
I know
it's up to him. Fair enough. I understand that. That's fine. I've got the objections about him doing it, but each to their own. You know,
maybe he's a keen swimmer.
Yeah, I doubt that very much. But why on earth would he want to? Why? What difference is it going to make to him?
Why? My question is, why wouldn't he wax? If you're going to do it,
yeah.
I mean, get rid of them for an extended period of time. Yeah, don't just shave them, because you could just get up with them all stubbly. And if you're looking to entertain somebody within the realm of your sheets, then you're going to have stubbly legs annoying them.
Yeah, what's the stuff that you use that you need to wax where you put it on? What's the stuff called the hair removal stuff?
Imac.
Imac, yeah. Why is it not Imac?
We'll get to an Imac story in a moment, but this is Phil Neville's defence of Marco Asensio.
There's a story doing the rounds on social media. Do you know about this, about Asensio and why he missed today's game?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is because he's got an infection.
Caused by shaving his legs.
Yes.
Yeah. So it gave him a pimple on his leg, and it meant that he couldn't pull his socks up.
That's happened to me. Yeah. Well, you live on the continent, do what the continents do. You shave your legs, you get infections, you can't pull your socks up.
So when did this happen to you then?
2 or 3 years ago.
Right, okay.
No, it can be quite, it can hurt.
Right, okay.
I don't think I'd admit that, really. Well, miss a game for Real Madrid. 99% of people in Spain shave the legs, shave the chest, shave their arms, shave every part of their body. So I'm part of the 99% of people that live in Spain.
You are fitting in with, you're trying to
when
adapt.
In Rome, when in Rome, do what the Romans do.
When on the continent, do what the continents do, Kevin.
Yeah, that was the standout line from Phil there. That was just classic material.
We have to mention that Cologne have taken the lead away to Arsenal. We were an hour waiting for this game, but by God, we weren't long waiting for a rather stupendous finish. It's come from John Cadorba, their striker, and he has gotten a ball which was initially cleared by David Ospina. It found its way to Cadorba, who turned in one swift movement and clipped one from all of what, 30 odd, 35 yards?
At least. 40 yards. What a finish. And it's the vision and the awareness. He knows that Ospina's obviously come out of his penalty area. He's come off his line to clear it. Ospina doesn't deal with it particularly well, because the clearance has obviously got
no purchase,
put it back in the air, and any purchase. Yeah, good word, Rich.
Thanks.
And it's just the awareness from him. What great awareness, recognising the position, gets on the half turn, and it's well worth watching. Brilliant finish.
Absolutely. And those Cologne fans who have found their way into the Emirates Stadium are going absolutely mental, and coming up with 11 minutes played, and it is Arsenal 0 Cologne 1. Earlier on, we saw Everton, Kev, go down to a 3-0 defeat away to Atalanta, which is hardly a prime warm-up for Sunday's game, which is going to be live on Off the Ball against Manchester United. And it was a fairly strong-looking Everton side that they put out as well. We're looking at the likes of, well, apart from in goal, Stekelenburg started there, and we saw back four of Holgate, Jagielka, Keane and Bain, Schneiderlin, Bessic from midfield. Rooney seemed to be starting on the wide right of three that were in behind Calvert-Lewin, those being Vlasic and Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Yeah.
And a 3-0 defeat away to Atalanta, who, not one of the leading lights in Serie A, let's be quite honest.
Yeah, that's, what is it now, 8 goals now conceded in the last 3 games, no goals scored. the one thing he did last season, to be fair to Ronald Koeman, he got them well organised and difficult to beat. To concede so many goals as they're conceding so early on this season, it's not a great sign for Everton. And when they're not scoring, they don't look like they're going to score a goal. I mentioned before, I was at that Chelsea game when they come back after the European game last time out, and they look leggy, they look tired, they didn't get going at all, didn't look like they were ever going to score a goal. Sandro up front with Rooney playing just off him didn't work. It didn't look like he was going to get himself into any goal scoring positions, and they were poor, which is a worrying sign, particularly when you've got Man United on the horizon this Sunday.
The one that seemed to work for me earlier on in the season, and I'd hate saying earlier on in the season, we're what, 6-7 games in total in terms of European and League Cups and all that kind of nonsense. It seemed to work when it was Rooney up front and Calvert-Lewin supporting him.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in seeing that?
Yeah, a bit of that. Calvert-Lewin played up front tonight in his own. Again, it hasn't worked. You know, you've got youngsters there leading the line. Sandro's on the bench. The problem is that you're going to find, I think, at the moment with Everton, Koeman will probably try different formers to get that striking situation sorted. And, you know, you've got essentially three number 10s in your team. You've got Klaassen, you've got of course Sigurdsson and Rooney that are going to want to play in that sort of position, so he's playing with two inverted number 10s coming in from wide areas. That's to try and sort them out. You might have to just say, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have to stick Rooney through the middle for a few games, try to get him right. Rooney's obviously Wayne Rooney's headspace isn't in the greatest positions at the moment, but they're just problems going forward for them. Sigurdsson, after his goal that he scored in his debut, was unbelievable. He just hasn't quite clicked in the Premier League for him yet.
Dom King, the Northwest football reporter for the Daily Mail, joins us on the line. Evening, Dom.
Evening, gents. Are you okay?
Hi, Dom.
Not too bad. I don't know how much of this game you saw earlier on, Dom, but it didn't seem like a particularly bright performance from Everton, beginning their Europa League campaign with a 3-0 defeat away to Atalanta, who have only got one win from the three games so far this season in Serie A. Is not a great way to start the group, particularly when you've got the likes of Lyon still lying in wait for you.
No. I think I'm being kind in describing them as being abject tonight. I just listened to what the two of you were saying just before I came on, and I think Kevin just made a great point about they don't look like scoring at the minute, the way things are set up, and that's really worrying. They've only scored two goals, I think, since the beginning of the season. Wayne Rooney's got both of them. Obviously there was the Sigurdsson one in Europe in Croatia in the in the playoff one, but in the Premier League, only Rooney scored for them, and that is really alarming. When you think the one thing that Koeman said that he wanted to do more than anything was improve Everton's productivity. He kept making a point of saying that, and at the moment, nobody looks like they can score.
I think that's the thing, though, Don. The point we've made there about maybe defensively as well. Those eight goals they've conceded in the last three games. No response from Everton. Yeah, of course, he wanted to get it right up front. He didn't necessarily get that striker in that he wanted, but defensively, what he seemed to sort last season at Everton, and this season with bringing Keane in, you thought, and of course Pickford, defensively they'll be actually a little bit stronger, and it's not turned out that way. They don't seem to fit in quite yet, and it doesn't seem to have got the structure of the defence quite right yet.
No, I'm starting to think that they didn't play enough games in pre-season to try and, you know, it almost feels like at the minute that he's almost, I don't want to say learning on the job about a man who's had the career that he's had, but he's brought so many players in that I don't think he knows what's best yet and how to get it together. I mean, I think they only played four friendlies in pre-season, and the two games against Rosenborg, and then they went straight into the Premier League. I'm not sure that it's been they've done enough work in trying to find out what the best 11 is yet.
Was Koeman trying to?
They're playing like a team that don't really know each other yet.
Was Koeman trying to use those games against Rosenborg, knowing that he had qualifiers coming up for the Europa League? Was he almost using those as de facto pre-season games?
Yeah. That's what he made the point of saying. That they played one game in Holland against FC 20, then they played Genk, and then they went straight into that qualifier. Came back, missed a week. Well, just basically trained for the week. Played Rosenborg again, and then played Sevilla, and then they were into the season. Mm-hmm. Oh, and they obviously had the game in Tanzania as well. So I don't know. It just doesn't feel like they've had the right kind of preparation that you would sort of expect.
Who would you blame for, like, in terms of organising the pre-season stuff? How much input would Kuhn have had? How much would, you know, commercial interest? I know we saw the trip to Tanzania and all that.
Koeman's basically had the full say. I know they took the game in Tanzania, but that they were basically in and out of there within 4 days. When they came back from then, they went to Holland, a base that Koeman knew from his time with Ajax, and they trained there double sessions every day. Had two good games, and it was that week was great for them. But I mean, they brought like 9 new players in, and you know, obviously there was a couple on transfer deadline day in terms of Vlasic and whatnot, and I just think that's almost a new team, and he I just don't think he's worked out how to get it all knitting together yet.
And I'll move on to probably Liverpool in a sec, but I just wanted to say, just given that the fact that they have signed 9 players then, Dom, do you think it's a bit harsh then to judge them so early, given that the form that they've had, and it might take a bit of time for those players to gel in?
Well, I'm probably not speaking to anyone better than you, Kevin, in terms of like knowing how desperate the fact, you'll know what I mean when I'm saying the fans are just so desperate for things to happen. They've been waiting so long for the club to try and make its mark, and then they're looking at having spent 135 million. That kind of figure had never been heard of before.
Yeah.
And they're just thinking that, you know, they finished last season strongly, got back into Europe, and then they're hoping for the big push again, that, you know, this spending was going to propel them forward again, and it's just not happening at the minute. I mean, you can't judge somebody after 4 games. I don't think, I know Crystal Palace did it with De Boer, but I think it's too soon to start making rash judgments. But equally, I think we have to recognise that the things just aren't right there at the minute.
They're damned if they do and damned if they don't. I know we want to move on to Liverpool, but in terms of the Wayne Rooney situation, I mean, remove him from the team or have him take a spell out, and you're opening him up to all sorts of questions about where his head is at, and then play him, and you're almost in the same boat, because if he's not playing to his optimum, then you're asking major questions of, well, is this guy fit to play or not? So they're really in a catch-22 situation with him at the moment, especially when you consider where they're going on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not been a great couple of weeks for him, to put it mildly. I mean, just talk about when he arrived back at the club. I mean, he did everything right during the summer to get himself back here, and it looked like the move had reinvigorated him. Now, I don't know about his personal life or anything like that. I'm not making any kind of comments about that, but he's. We can all see the things. There's clearly something on his mind, shall we say? And they've got to try and find some way of managing the situation. But I mean, I think it'd almost be sort of counterproductive taking him out of the team at the minute, because the one thing he does is he loves more than anything is playing football. But if he's not contributing to the team, then the manager's going to make a decision.
Yeah. We almost saw in a similar situation with Roberto Firmino. It seemed last year at Liverpool, it seemed to be managed slightly better. I know there's less pressure on him in terms of the kind of public figure he would be in and around Merseyside or in England in general, but it seemed like that flew under the radar almost, and he was able to continue on. It didn't really seem to affect his game in any kind of outward level, so fingers crossed from Wayne Rooney's perspective on all fronts that this is kind of resolved sooner rather than later. On Liverpool, Dom, last night we saw them begin their Champions League campaign with a 2-2 draw at home to Sevilla, and again it was one of those games that you're looking at from a Liverpool perspective that should have been put to bed, and instead they're coming away with a point and yet more questions about a leaky defence.
Yeah, hit the nail on the head. I mean, the first goal that they gave away after 4 minutes was just shocking. How easy it happened. You could almost sort of see what fate was going to befall them when Emre Can sort of hesitated for a tackle, and you could see the pitch opening up, and Dejan Lovren misses what should have been a simple clearance, but the way they then came back and scored 2 goals, could have probably had a couple more, missed the penalty, was electric. I mean, when they attack and when they're on song, those three going forward, I think I'm probably fair to say that they're as good as anything in the league going forward when it all clicks together. They're exciting, they're fast, they've got energy, and when the crowd gets behind them at Anfield, they're very difficult to play against. But there's one major caveat that we have to add here, and I don't think they're ever going to achieve anything substantial if they keep defending as they have been. And I don't just want to single out the defence. I mean, defending as a team, because it's you can't just sort of pin it on two people. It's look at the second goal last night. It came throwing. It was a throw and then a ball forward, and you know that's just not good enough.
If I were to ask you now, would Klopp change his style and change his principles? Philosophy, Richie likes that word. I wouldn't use that word myself, Dom, to be quite honest with you. I know what your answer would be. You'd say no. But how thin is the patience wearing then within Anfield, within the crowd, when they're coming to games, knowing full well what we've seen, not just since Klopp's reign, we've seen this now for a number of years now. This has been the Achilles heel of Liverpool. When they've put themselves in great positions, it's been that defensive structure of the side. So how long is it going to be before we can start to seriously start to question Jurgen Klopp as a manager, to think, well, he's come into the club and he hasn't corrected the wrongs that have been there clearly for such a long time?
I was going to call him stubborn, but he's very sort of it's his way. He's got absolute unshakable belief in that his methods will be proven right. I mean, he obviously knows that they need to improve defensively, and he wants to buy Van Dijk this summer. We all know the story, what went on there, and I think that sort of stubbornness that I've just mentioned, you can see in the fact that he wouldn't consider going to look for somebody else when he couldn't
Why didn't he have a plan B in place, though? Most managers and most structures in clubs, though, Dom, they would always have somebody else. He's your number one, and then he's our go-to guy. And they didn't seem to have that plan B in place, though.
No, I just don't think he wanted to spend money on something that he didn't necessarily want. I'm sure names would have been put forward. I mean, I think the I know they looked at Michael Keane. Michael Keane was discussed at length, but Klopp, you know, was absolutely adamant that Van Dijk would be the one, and they haven't been able to get it over the line. I mean, I still think somewhere down the line that could happen. But I mean, you can sort of, yeah, I suppose you have to admire him in some way that he was so backing himself so much on Van Dijk that he didn't want to do anything else. But as I said, that back four is just not good enough. It needs to be improved, and you know, should they have done more? They're going to look back on last summer in terms of the Van Dijk thing and probably kick themselves a bit, aren't they, in terms of not being able to get it done, because he could have transformed everything.
Do we really think that Van Dijk would have made that much of a difference? I mean, there is a school of thought going around as well that, you know, ultimately you can have the best defenders in the world, but if you're not working properly with them, and if you're not training properly with them, and if you're not setting the right systems in place, then ultimately it's not going to work regardless of who you have there.
No, that's a fair point, but I just think, looking at last night, I wouldn't see. I'd be amazed if Van Dijk missed a clearance like the one that Lovren did. I mean, I watched Van Dijk a few times last year, and there was one game that sort of stuck in my mind when they played at St Mary's in the first leg of the League Cup semi final. And there was an incident with Daniel Sturridge where he just basically put his hand on his shoulder and pushed him to the floor, and it was just like he was swatting him to one side, and you can just see he's got everything you want in a defender, you know, big, strong, brilliant on the ball. You could see him fitting into that team and leading them, and just being commanding in the way that Lovren doesn't do.
Dom, we had just one thing, just maybe on defence. I don't want to maybe overstate, but we had Graeme Souness on the show last night, and Joe asked Graeme Souness the question, what has James Milner done wrong? Now, he's clearly now seen something in Alberto Moreno that he hadn't seen last season. So why has that one come about, and why does he continuously stick with Moreno when he is making basic errors in a lot of the games that Liverpool are playing?
it's a good question because I didn't see this happening at all. In June, there was a bid from Napoli that they turned down. If Napoli had offered an extra €4 million, he'd have played for them. Sevilla wanted to take him back, as I understand in terms, but they didn't want to go for more than €7 million, so he was available to go. But apparently his attitude and his training since he came back has been first class. He's in the style that Klopp plays, you know, that sort of with the fullbacks pushing on high and almost being.
Oh, we appear to have lost Dom there. We're getting on to the defence of Alberto Moreno. Yeah, we'll wrap there anyway with Dom on the point that Alberto Moreno seems to be a changed figure. God bless him.
Yeah, not on the pitch though. Clearly not on the pitch. He may have trained hard, and you know sometimes you put yourself in the manager's thinking because of that.
That's the worrying thing, is that we're 16 months on from that loss to Sevilla when everybody then thought he would be out the door. That's it, he's gone. There's no point in continuing on with this lad. But we're now in the situation where he's their first choice left back, and something probably needs to be looked at as we go forward. We'll be talking about the plans to play La Liga games outside of the realms of Spain with Graham Hunter on the way next, and it's still Arsenal 0, Cologne 1 in London.
He don't need a ship to sail the stormy weather. He don't need you to ruffle the feathers of his peacock suit. Graham Hunter, good evening.
I've got a grapefruit manner. It's as sour as it. there's no changing it either, baby. Meanwhile, I don't share sartorial elegance, but we're mean buggers if you annoy us. That's why I love peacock suit.
His shirts are slightly more expensive than mine and yours, Graham.
They are, and he wears them slightly better, but I'm Paul Weller mentally. That's where I've got a Paul Weller inside my brain. That's where I'm linked to him, baby.
That's the most important place for it to be. Come here, it's been a pretty busy week, and it'd be remiss of us not to talk of the Champions League. Most recently last night, I suppose we'll start at events at the Bernabeu, where Real opened up the defence of their campaign and their start for three in a row and all that kind of good stuff, with a 3-0 victory at home to Apoel Nicosia. When Cristiano Ronaldo struck early on, I think everybody was expecting, and there's a few people who had accumulators in the office, were expecting Real to kick on and possibly win by 5 or 6 in this one. Never really happened for them. And especially towards the end of that first half, things seem to be slightly frustrating from a Real point of view.
I think that's a theme ever since perhaps the game in La Coruña at the Riazor when Real Madrid were sublime, and they spun off the back of winning two trophies very, very quickly. European Super Cup, Spanish Super Cup. And I think that there's been a conglomeration of effects that led to Apoel managing to cling on to a game that they shouldn't have done. I thought Real Madrid's second half was actually quite significantly better. There were things to take out of the game that are important, some of which I've been saying, some of which, you know, I want to claim because, you know, Ronaldo isn't simply this big player with a vast goal total. He's one of the two key footballers in that squad that breaks stuffy games. Ronaldo's goals, if you start to really put a microscope on them, he has this element whereby, irrespective of how he's playing, irrespective of who it's against, and irrespective of how maybe his teammates are clicking, a goal comes. I think that's one of the things that separates him from almost everybody else, leaving Messi in a different category. And I think that Ramos is the other. And you know, when they were suspended needlessly, Ronaldo was coming back, wasn't he, Richie, after having missed domestic games during which they've dropped 4 points, and you see the Spanish champions who want to defend this title, suddenly 4 points behind Real Sociedad and Real Madrid. And to draw home to Valencia when Benzema had a hatful of chances and he would normally win, that was not great, but Valencia played well. To draw home to Levante, who resembled Apoel in terms of their tactical ideas, how well they got bodies behind the ball, not once, but twice, but three times, who stopped transitions. And I think that accounts for where your accumulators went. But Ramos breaks games. He scored 7 times last season, and 6 of those goals were at the Bernabeu and specifically brought points. By which I mean, if you strip Ramos's goals away, it's a 0-0, not a 1-0, or it's a, you know, it's a 2-1 defeat at home, not a 2-2, or it's a 3-2. But he's got the same special element as Cristiano Ronaldo, and it's something more than determination. So I think if you look at both of them coming back and scoring, they can all look retrospectively and say it's been ultra damaging, even at this early stage, that Ramos and Ronaldo were the ones who earned themselves bans that were unnecessary. Ramos didn't need to get sent off late on against Deportivo La Coruña. Ronaldo didn't need to push the referee. And when you talked about that first goal, when he scores it, he runs into the net to get the ball. It's only Apoel. It's a game you know they're going to win, but he wanted those goals.
He looked hungry last night.
He wanted to pick up everybody. He wanted to catch Messi. And the urgency led to maybe fewer goals than you might have counted. But I think there were things that were important, including Bale playing well on the left, where we time and again on this show, I've made the case that Ronaldo has been blocking Bale moving to the left, and he needs to. His assist for the first goal broke the game, Bale. So you can take reasonable positives even from the world's finest and European champions beating a Cypriot team 3-0.
We'll move on to Barcelona, because the night before they put in one of these imperious displays, and it was Lionel Messi again, who, I mean, we talk about big game players. He seems not reborn, but it seems like we're entering a new chapter with Leo. I mean, we're up to, what, 30 years of age now. Neymar is gone. There's a little bit more room, both physically and spiritually, I suppose, up front in that Barcelona front line for him to operate. And he's welcoming that and proved it against a rather decent, albeit shaved of a couple of players through injury, a decent Juventus side.
I think you're on a theme that even if you don't choose to stay with reborn, regenerated. This is a guy who is driven differently from Cristiano. And Cristiano is driven by what, you know, he told, the first time I heard this phrase came via his trusted friend, Walter de Sava, who was the performance coach at Manchester United for Ronaldo and at Real Madrid. Mm. And getting to know Walter said, Cristiano expressly wants to be known as the best player of all time. Not to win the Golden Ball repeatedly, to push down Messi, but the best of all time. That's his goal. Now, Messi isn't driven by that, but what does happen is a little bit like David Beckham. Do you remember when Beckham's ability and his dedication to bettering his skills, his love for Manchester United, put all of them aside, and his dominating characteristic was, if you push me, punch me, cheat me, annoy me, I'll be back better. And Messi has that. And so to be humiliated by Juventus last season was a precursor to this match. To watch Ronaldo winning everything, individually and in team, that was a stimulus. To watch Neymar go, there's a better future in Paris. And Messi would hold no grudge. The friendship won't be diminished. But you knew he'd be left with, well, I'll show you that it's here. To hear Dybala, they're not enemies in the Argentinian team, but hear Dybala, who is an extraordinarily talented young footballer, say, like, well, at national level, it's difficult to play with Messi. Give him the ball, Paolo. Again, that was a little dig to the ribs. To hear the media going on and on and on and on about, like, well, Messi's never scored against Buffon. I remember in 2009, the media refrain which reached Messi about he's never scored against an English club. And you knew in Rome he was going to score. He scored with a header which looped over Edwin van der Sar, and he's in a better position. You know, the ball comes across Vidic and Ferdinand, and Messi scores with it. This is what happens, Richie. This is what Messi does, irrespective of needing to win, the fact he's a team player, the fact that he wanted 3 points at home. All of those are already computed for Messi. He was poked in the ribs so many times, and then Pjanic, who was Juve's best player on the night, kind of quite rugby tackling, but he's got his arms around his midriff and he throws it into the ground, and Messi makes a bookable, you know, decision by waving the card that's coming to the referee's face and gets booked legitimately, but loses his temper because then Pjanic isn't booked. And he loses his temper, and everybody I've ever known who's known Messi tells me, you don't make him angry. And I was trying to get the tweet out about that before he scored. I knew the goal was inevitably going to come because he was pissed off. And I just got the tweet out before the goal came, I think 110 seconds later. And there's Messi for you. Not only gifted beyond belief, and still enjoying winning and beating players and scoring as much as he's ever done. But if you push him, he pushes back 3 times as hard.
It's pretty easy to, like, you know, obviously enough, it's pretty easy to concentrate on Messi and all he's done so far this season, and particularly last Tuesday night. But I want to talk about Barca's defence, because outside of the Supercoppa, they've yet to concede this season, which is pretty remarkable stuff. What's Valverde done differently, or has he done anything differently?
I'm not so sure that he has. I think that what you can definitely look at is that Madrid scored goals for fun against them and should have scored more. I think that it's absolutely the case that until now, Valverde hasn't been sure about exactly how to go at right back. Semedo always looked like the right thing to me. And he's not necessarily a guarantee of defensive security, but he is an exceptional footballer, exceptional athlete. And what you need in a back four, I'm convinced, is continuity and understanding, so that it's the, you know, the sum is greater than the parts. But beyond that, what is definitely happening is that even though Barcelona in those games that you've identified against Betis at home, against Alaves away, against Espanyol, even though they've conceded chances, Barca's midfield is functioning so much better offensively and defensively. And actually, what that means is that while Ter Stegen is being asked to make saves, sometimes one-on-one, as it was against Alaves and Betis, sometimes a stream of low saves against Juventus, this will not be Europe's best defence, but it will be much more competitive, I think, as long as injury pardons them. I think you see the pressing. Barcelona's pressing without the ball all over the pitch in tandem, in groups of two and three, and then pressing again if the first two or three don't get it, is at a level that I haven't really seen since either the treble season of Luis Enrique or maybe the Guardiola years. And that's a big, big statement.
Huge.
Because pressing's a mentality, not just a physical thing. You have to believe. You have to believe that everybody else is doing it around you. And you have to believe in the purpose, and it's working. And Busquets and Iniesta are as happy now and as comfortable on the ball as I've seen them for many, 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 many months. And all of these factors are adding to your zero conceded, zero conceded, zero conceded. But they are not yet. I don't think that the way in which they keep the ball in the really great eras has reached the same level. And as such, they're not invincible. They are definitely still going to be vulnerable. And there'll be ups and downs this season. But the mentality, the attitude, the spirit of all for one, one for all, and the degree to which everybody, when Messi believes, everybody else believes, that has transformed them from last season.
And before we let you go into that general light, Graeme, I want to talk to you about these plans to hold La Liga games outside of Spain, i.e. potentially in the US and China. How well or how otherwise has that plan gone down in Spain this week?
Spain is a country whereby a lot of these kind of initiatives get talked about and people maybe grumble, but they don't necessarily move with the same coherence and hard-nosed edge as the Premier League. There is, there has been a drive from the very leading clubs and then subsequently from the middle-order clubs that we'd better serve Asia and we'd better tour America in the summer. And that has begun to be understood. But the concept of playing these games, that you're absolutely right, which has been mooted, there has been next to no public or even briefing reaction, because Spain is a country where if you can put off dealing with things while you argue about other things or about refereeing or you slag each other off, that's the way forward.
It seems in this instance it's pretty close though, doesn't it?
It's absolutely. I mean this in terms of they are capable, their administrations at club level are capable of being so caught up in infighting, or in Barcelona's board's case, fighting for their lives, because emotion of no confidence going on at the moment. There is not this. When the Premier League was formed, I'm using England as a template because that's not to exclude the way that Bundesliga markets at all. But we know the profitability, the cohesion, and the aggression with which the Premier League is marketed over its existence. That still does not exist in Spain. And therefore, even things like, effectively, I'm using a longer way of describing what we all used to call the mañana culture. Big decisions can be skirted and put off. And if you want cohesion and strategy and things being well planned out and talked out and then applied, apart from how footballers are developed, don't look for that in Spanish football, which I promise you.
It'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. Graeme, go off and enjoy yourself.
I have every intention, baby.
Good man. Graeme Hunter, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Off the ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Yeah, very welcome back to the last part of tonight's Off the Ball and indeed the football show. It is halftime at the Emirates. That game delayed, of course, by an energy to crowd trouble outside. Arsenal 0, Cologne 1 the score at the break. It is John Cordoba's fantastic effort from a distance, Cordoba even, from distance that separates the sides at the break. Arsenal making faces amongst themselves and looking unhappy as they trudged off, and Cologne looking like they're pretty much in cruise control, Kev.
And they look like they're a real threat on the break, don't they? Typical Arsenal.
Very quick, yeah.
Arsenal having a lot of the ball, controlling the play, essentially what you're saying, but hardly creating chances. Giroud's had a couple of half chances with crosses going in, but chances have been coming to Cologne. The way that they're breaking, they look so pacey. Arsenal's two outside centre-halves, left and right, out of position, and they're getting in down the flanks, and it's been quite easy for them with one ball just to get straight in behind Arsenal's defence. And you know, it's a funny one, and you're looking at before the game, if ever there's a side that's going to crumble when they've got a little bit of time on their hands, thinking about, oh, we're delayed for an hour, you
getting
know,
our
plan's gone to pot. You think of the side as Arsenal and Cologne. You know, maybe you want to think the German mentality in there as well. We'll sit here for 6 hours. We'll be grand. We'll be fine. We'll get out there. But it certainly worked out that way. And I mean, it's a fantastic goal. Cordoba, was it the lad that scored the goal?
Yeah.
What a goal. Brilliant goal. Well worth watching. But they look strong.
Yeah, the atmosphere is all coming, it seems, as well, from the Cologne fans who made their way into the stadium, even with that delay tonight. Elsewhere in that group, it is just about to finish up in Belgrade. Crvena Zvezda, formerly Red Star Belgrade, of course, won. Bate Borisov won. Elsewhere, of course, tonight we saw Everton go down to a 3-0 defeat away to Atalanta. Very poor start to proceedings from them. We had loads of texts in as well, Kev. We didn't even get to the half of them about the shaving the legs.
Yeah.
Why do you shave your face? Asks one texter. Who are you trying to please there, Kev? What's the difference?
I don't really shave a lot.
You don't, actually. Yeah. You're not almost as bad as me.
Yeah, so I only shave. My dad used to tell me to shave all the time. My dad used to give me a clip like, go and have a shave. My dad's not there to do that now, so it's all right. I can actually just... do as I please.
I still get a tut off me ma when she sees the beard. She's like, would you ever not trim that beard down?
Yeah.
So we're not like Texter. We're not like Marco Asensio trying to shave our faces for the pleasure of others. We're just keeping it a little bit rough and ready. Tomorrow night on the show, we'll bring you some highlights of what's gone on tonight at the Olympia Theatre in our Off the Ball. Very special build up to the All-Ireland Football Final and our laundry list of guests that were down there and that we're about to rejoin, I think, Kev. But up next is Tom Dunn. He will bring you through until midnight tonight. It is at the break. Arsenal 0, Cologne 1. And we didn't even mention the fact that Peter Stöger, in his Red Runners, the guy who got a hat trick for Austria home for them, away as Ireland was back in 1996 at the Ernst Happel Stadium. He's the coach of Cologne tonight.
Good name. Yeah.
Stöger.
It's a name that doesn't sit well with us, but it's one of those names you just think back and you remember it, don't you?
You shudder. And also, cause to make you shudder, if you ever want to look up something horrifying tonight, say Arsene Wenger's coat. Good luck. Good night.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.